for centuries. Darkness ruled over the world. The evil and the wicked reigned supreme. But along came a podcast imbued with light, determined to serve, return, and fight for righteousness, to establish Dharma in life, to four corners of the globe. The call was heard. The end was the beginning, and the beginning was the word. It was mightier than the sword. The Lord was first take this birth to realize heaven on earth.
Oh, hello. Welcome to the Spiritual Tradie podcast again. Today we chat with Dylan Newman, who is currently living through Melbourne's lockdowns, and we go deep into his journey and also into the COVID situation that is unfolding day by day down there, and we have a good chat. Enjoy. Dylan Newman, welcome to the potty, mate.
Thanks for having me.
Got a lot to talk about today, but I want to start with you first.
Yeah.
So generally when I, you know, have people on the potty, it's generally just a light conversation about your journey and your path. Okay. So you're a yoga teacher, right?
Yep. I'm a yoga teacher. I have been for probably the last 6 years now.
Yep. How did you get there?
So I have a martial arts background. So for my kind of most of my life, I was training in martial arts and competing, in kickboxing, and kung fu. So I always had a real passion for the Eastern styles. And I initially got into meditation. I've always had this kind of this mentor in my life who's a real yogi. He's an old man now. He's in his 90s.
Who's that? Give him a name.
His name is Phil Greenway. So he was a professor of psychology at Melbourne University, I believe. Well, yeah, Melbourne.
Yeah.
And just a really spiritual guy, just the wisest man I've ever met. And in my early 20s, I would always go and kind of seek his advice on certain areas of my life. And he suggested that I get into yoga and meditation. Doing all the martial arts was really good, but I just needed a way to kind of control my mind, to try and channel that energy. So I started yoga and meditation then in my early 20s.
Right.
And from there, it took off. The more I practiced yoga, the more I practiced meditation, the kind of the calmer I became, and the whole world of competitive sport just started to lose its appeal for me a little bit. Mm-hmm. And yeah, that was it. So I started practicing a lot of yoga. I found a Buddhist meditation teacher by the name of Alan Wallace, mm-hmm. very world renowned Tibetan Buddhist teacher. I went and spent some kind of really long stints, 3 month vipassanas with him, one in Switzerland, one in Italy.
That complete silence for 3 months.
Yeah, complete silence, no technology. Just
wow.
Just meditating, you know, 8-9
hours. What happens to your mind in that state? Like, do you trip out?
Look, you go through a little roller coaster. I mean, initially, and the first, this is how it went for me usually. The first few days takes a little bit to unwind. But you got to realize you have no phone, no computer, you don't even have a computer, and nobody's talking to you. And these were pretty serious spiritual practitioners. And so they wouldn't even make eye contact with you most of the time. It was
right
in their own little space. So, and then what I found is that your mind gets really, really overactive because, you know, it has nowhere to go. So it's just you and your thoughts 24 mm-hmm. hours a day. And it can go two ways. You either have the skills to manage that, or your mind just starts to really drive you a little bit crazy. I found it kind of went in little spikes. So I'd go mad for a couple of days, and then I'd get really calm, and then I'd go a little bit mad, and then really calm. But by the end, I tell you what, by the end, I didn't want to leave both times. But I've got to the end. I'm just really, you just start really enjoying the simplest things in life, going for a walk in nature, taking an hour and a half to eat a meal. It really has been the most meaningful thing I've ever done, I think. And I think that what I really got out of it was you learn to become really good mates with yourself. You learn to befriend yourself and to befriend your mind. And that stayed with me to this day.
Beautiful.
So, yeah, so I've been teaching yoga, meditation for the last 6 years. And, yeah, I'll probably be teaching it for some time yet to come.
Yeah. Where did you do your trainings and stuff like that for yoga?
I did my teacher training at Power Living. I think back in 2014. Yeah.
Right. Cool.
And I've done, I studied extensively now with Alan Wallace. So I've also done a teacher training with him on Buddhist meditation and psychology.
Right. Amazing.
Yeah. So that's me.
Cool. Are you planning to run any 3 month Vipassanas yourself anytime soon?
We will. We had a few, not 3 months, but we had some plans to run, you know, a 10 day towards this end of this year. But obviously that's all our plans of like everyone
out
else.
Out the window. Yeah.
Yeah, out the window. But that will definitely happen. I really want to get them. I think there's there's going to be a real need for those kind of practices and come out of this.
Absolutely. Especially the technological detox side of it, right?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you just go on them and you just realize very quickly how much we rely on stimulation.
Yeah. To distract.
To distract. It's just, it becomes so habitual, doesn't it? As soon as there's nothing for you to do, you want to go for your phone or you go for, it just always has to be something in stimulating us.
Yeah.
And when you take all of that away, you really start, and the mind starts to slow down. And then you can start to experience kind of life in a different way where you're not constantly needing stimulation and excitement, but you're just taking in the simple pleasures of life.
So I'm going to rush to the end of this potty because normally I'd ask you more questions about you. Yeah. But the last question I normally ask is, what's your favorite spiritual wisdom or quote? Do you have one?
Ooh, put me on the spot there. All right, I've got one, and it's by... it's by Mark Twain, and he says, it's not what you don't know that gets you into trouble. It's what you know, what you think you know for sure that just ain't so.
Right.
Something like that. I'm paraphrasing a little bit. It's not what you don't know that gets you into trouble. It's what you think you know for sure that kind of leads us down the wrong path. That kind of... yeah, that illusion of knowledge.
The certainty.
Yes.
Yes. All right, cool.
It's happening here.
Yeah. How many times in life have you been certain of something and then, you know, through your own practices and own self-discovery gone, ah, shit, again? You know, you found yourself not to know and be like, right, I need to be a little bit less certain next time.
It's a humbling journey, isn't it? It's
yeah.
One humbling experience after another.
Yeah. So like I said, we're going to talk about today about the COVID situation. You're in Melbourne, obviously.
Yeah.
And so what's the vibe like there? I'll ask you what the vibe's like.
Well, look, this week we've had the sun come out and I think that's been helpful. I was down on the beach on the weekend and, you know, a lot of people seem to be getting back, you know, to some form of normality in terms of going to the beach, hanging out with friends in picnics and really good to see. That's been really good to see because it's been a long, long, dark winter here in Melbourne. And in general, over the last 3 months, I think it's been a very heavy vibe. A lot of fear and a lot of division. And I think people are having... seem to have a really difficult time, you know, even talking about what's happening here at the moment. So overall, it's a tough time for Melbourne and anyone in Melbourne, I think. I don't think you can really escape it as much as you want to bury your head in the sand. It's you're going to pick up on the energy around you. And but hopefully this, some hope coming towards the end of the year. I hope, anyway.
Yeah, I was saying that to a friend the other day. It's almost like, every time you talk about politicians taking too much power, it always gets compared to Hitler, right? So you could imagine that it being so cold in Germany and Poland and places like that it would have been easier to enforce these kind of restrictive things and do bad because everyone's miserable anyway. But when the sun comes out, it's very hard to keep Aussies locked up in their house, and with masks on and believing this story, So that's one thing that's on our side, I guess.
Yeah, well, I think that once you get a few 30-degree days, it will be interesting to see how the public respond to that. Trying to keep them off, it's going to be very. Because I think we kind of deep down inside, we know that it's good for us. We know that it's good for us to be out in nature and to be with people. And as much as they can tell us that it's dangerous, I don't think any of us really in our heart believe that. I think we naturally want to be outdoors. We want to be in the sun. We want to be with the earth
Connect with each other.
and connecting with each other. So yeah, summer's going to be interesting. I hope we find our way this summer, and come out of this darkness that we've experienced over winter.
I'm a little disconnected here. Hang on.
That's all good.
What's going on?
Probably because you're there in
Yeah, just
the
sometimes
Amazon.
it does drop out, mate. I need to get the 5G wired up.
won't be long now.
So tell me about how you've experienced the whole situation, because for me, I started off being very just ignorant to it all and being like, yeah, we got to do the right thing, lockdown, and just went into lockdown like everyone else and was like, yep, this could be bad, let's just see how it plays out. And then it sort of, after a certain period of time, I started looking at more information and my mind started to go towards, hang on, this doesn't feel like it's actually about the thing that they're telling us it's about anymore, and it seems to be overblown and disproportionate. And you're seeing things happen like, that those towers, when those towers got locked down in Melbourne, those nine towers, that's when I was like, shit, this is not what we think it is. They're doing something else here. So how did you, were you like that from the very beginning, or have you been like into like looking at the deep state stuff since years ago, or what's the story?
I haven't been into the deep state stuff for, I've always known it's there. Look, for me, like everyone in the beginning, I was curious. I was suspicious. I was suspicious as soon as I saw how heavily involved Bill Gates was getting, because I don't have a lot of trust for that particular individual. And when he started speaking a lot about and getting really on the front foot, I was like, hang on a minute. What's his motivation? Because that guy is motivated by not always by the best intentions, unfortunately. So I was suspicious, but I went along with it, and did all the precautions. I was always wanting to question it, and looking into it a bit deeper. And then when I think it was when I started to hear some governors in the States come out and openly say that the way they're classifying the deaths is, it's not, it's very indefinite, indistinct. It's not really distinguishing between, if someone just had it or if they died from it. And as soon as that happened, I'm like, wait a second, that doesn't make any sense, because you can, if that's how it's going to be, you can just play with these numbers any way you'd like. And the other thing that was the giveaway for me was the way the media reported it. The way the media was reporting it, you could see the sensationalism, and you could see the way that they were labeling anybody who wanted to question this, no matter how qualified they were to question it, was suddenly being put in a category of, a nutcase or a conspiracy theorist, And as soon as that started happening, I'm like, nah, this isn't cool, because for some reason, we're not allowed to question the information we're getting, no matter how many holes there are in the story. It's just taboo to even ask these questions, and that didn't sit well. So as soon as that happened, I was asking every possible question I could come up with.
Mm-hmm. Where did you start? What did you start looking at?
Well, I've always been, like, before this even happened last year, I was researching into 5G a little bit. Mm-hmm. Mainly just because I personally, I'm just going to close that blind a little.
Yeah.
Just for I don't want to live in an area where I'm exposed to high density radiation. I mean, I've kind of been aware of that. And then I've been aware of those towers going up near my home, and I'm like, well, so I was already kind of looking into what's behind that when this came up. And
before you go there, what was the things you were finding when you're looking at 5G? Because I haven't done a lot of research on it. I'm open-minded to it, like you. Yep. Want to know what the effects are, but it seems to be the same thing. If you question it, you're in that box of conspiracy.
Which is just crazy, because this isn't the same as 4G. I mean, people try and say it's the same. It's not the same. If you look into it, it's much high. It's short range, and it's high density. So say 4G is kind of like these long waves, and they travel a long distance. 5G is more like that. And it's very high density, short range, which means they need to have a tower or a small cell, you know, every 100 meters or so. And so I researched, and I found so many peer-reviewed scientific studies of just showing the dangers of, and I didn't even need to see them, to be honest. I just felt intuitively, I know I don't, the less radiation I can be exposed to, the better. Mm-hmm. And the way that was getting squashed, and you know, you're the same kind of thing, you're a conspiracy theorist to even question that, and I found that strange. And you know, I would be presenting people with 1500, I got 1500 there, peer-reviewed studies of the dangers of it, and
1500
scientific papers highlighting the dangers of this radiation. And it's just, it's like, it's not even up for debate, in my opinion. And so basically the Melbourne's going to become a bit of a smart city in that way. And we're going to be living in a little microwave city. So I forgot where we started with this, but yeah, 5G. And I think that also the dangers with it is it starts to give more and more power and control to people who might want to use that, in kind of sinister way, that the power for us to be under 24-hour surveillance, the facial recognition, to all of that always is a concern to me. You can see the cities in China, right? There's some cities in China now who have a full social credit system happening, where I was watching a documentary on it was SBS. If you jaywalk in a city in China, you just, you know, cross not at the lights, the 5G is so good there that they'll pick up your face, right? And they'll immediately put on like a, what's one of those called?
Big screen.
Like a big screen. They'll put your face up and you get a fine. And just so they pick up your face because you jaywalked. So it's just, you know, we're going to start to be living in what would really be a robotic type existence.
An algorithm.
Yeah. Because I've been watching people here and you can just see, there's a beach road from my house here, and I'll go for a walk at night and there's no cars anywhere. There's not a car to be seen, but people will still walk all the way to the light, press the button and they'll wait for the man to tell them to go, when really that's an opportunity for you to use your human intelligence and go, okay, there's no danger here, I can cross the road. But you can see how we're slowly being trained to kind of live in this robotic state. So yeah, that's always concerning for me. I think it was some great quotes, but one by one of my favorites, Osho, he says, you know, this generation could be the last generation of people who have an opportunity to rebel. And if you don't rebel now, humanity is going to be reduced to a robot-like existence very quickly. I don't want a robot-like existence. I want a human experience as much as possible.
Me too. And I feel that, you know, that the way that social media polices things and deplatforms people and controls the narrative and all that kind of stuff, they're just going to make that 3D. It's just going to be a part of our life where you're always monitored. Like you said, you get your social credit score. The algorithm sets the rules. So you program the algorithm to detect what rules you're breaking at what times. And then everything's automated. You don't even have to see a police officer. You get a fine in the mail to let you know that you did this thing wrong. And then it just depends what lunatic gets to program the algorithm, right? So you might want to, you know, sing in public. They might decide, no, that's going to spread COVID. And you're then, you know, getting a fine or being arrested for breaking that law. And then that law could be there. 10 years later, the person that made the law is dead or, you know, long gone. But all these things, we have these things already in our actual law. But once we make them, you know, the computer state, we're only going to tighten and tighten and tighten to make it safer and safer and safer. And until the point where nobody can do anything, you know, and that's death of society. That's death of freedom, our creativity, which is what we like, humanity, you know, connection. And where was I going with that? It's basically we're living in the algorithm then, you know?
And you know what, people keep saying that like, oh, it's all okay. As long as you're not doing anything wrong, what do you have to worry about? And I'm like, that's fine. But they keep changing the rules of what's wrong. So you might say that's fine now, but what happens when they start bringing into law that you know, you can't travel outside of your suburb or this, you can't go to this place, you can't gather with these, the rules will keep changing. And suddenly we're all going to realize that what we thought was something that was perfectly acceptable and okay is no longer allowed. Mm-hmm. And there's nothing we can do about it now because we've just given all of that right away.
Exactly. It's complete tyranny. And it's kind of under this guise of equality by everyone has a similar amount of nothing, you know, it's not equality of opportunity where everyone has the chance to fulfill their potential. It's everyone has a cap on their potential and a limit to their expression, you know? And that's to me, that's super dangerous, super scary. And people just seem to be so blasé, like, oh, you know, it's fine, whatever. And it makes me feel crazy to be jumping up and down being like, hey, this has got to stop. But you look crazy, you know, but it's, you know, it's the machine. We're walking into the mulcher.
And I think more so in Australia, like my feeling of it is here in Australia, we've never had to fight for freedom. We've never really had to fight for anything. We've had it so easily. We've just had everything so, you know, the most livable city and everything's come easy to us. And I think we're complacent in that way and we're not switched on to the dangers that are in front of us. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can see in countries like Germany, who do have, you know, very recent history that we all know about. And they are really kind of, they're hyper-vigilant, hyper-aware. They're very switched on politically. They're always paying attention. And you can see their response now with, you know, millions of people taken to the streets. Mm-hmm. And similar in other European countries, but in Australia, I feel like we've kind of been lulled into a false sense of security to the point where we just think it's all going to be okay as long as we trust our government officials.
Yeah.
And this will all blow over and they wouldn't have any agendas or what, you know, why would they do that? I mean, I keep getting that. Like, why would the premier of this state intentionally destroy the economy? Mm-hmm. And I can think of a million reasons why he could be doing that. But it seems to be here, we don't have a bigger picture. We just think that the government is good. The pharmaceutical industry is inherently good and they want to help us. And media would never, ever lie to us. Why would the media lie? They're, you know, they've been in our homes our whole lives and they're familiar faces. Mm-hmm. But once you start to question, okay, maybe they're not being completely honest. Maybe the pharmaceutical industry has ulterior motives and maybe our government officials are, you know, susceptible to being bribed and paid off by other organizations, and maybe they're not working just for us, maybe they have a few other people that they're trying to please. Once you start asking those questions, you start to see how switched on you need to be.
And it goes again to this bigger picture, and it's very hard to put all of the information into one brain and to one mind and try to and put all the pieces in the right spot and be like, right, I know what's happening. It's very hard to have that. I know what's happening. Definitely, you know, because there's so many different pieces of the puzzle. And, you know, if you look at American politics, you look at, you know, any other country, all the countries, but the things that I always look for are these non-government organizations or these big, you know, UN or World Health Organizations, where they cross borders without restriction. They infiltrate all policy and dictate to all these countries similarly how to respond to anything without their own scientists doing the research, without their own kind of, you know, they just declare themselves as the rulers of the world.
Yep.
And it's super dangerous. And like you see with the World Health Organization, they're not an independent body separate from Big Pharma. They are an arm of Big Pharma designed to make it easier for them to get their vaccines out to the world. They're very pro vaccine, right? So who's the independent body that's policing them? Because that's dangerous to be in bed with the thing that you're supposed to be the watching over. And so then you try to say that's the thing that I'm concerned about, that they've been dictating to us how we should respond to COVID, and we've been ignoring the actual data that we're seeing come in from our response. We can see that most people, you know, recover fairly quickly and without symptom, but yet we're still told to lock the whole country down, destroy the economy. And then we see independent premiers like Daniel Andrews running a different show altogether, which to me looks sus because he's tied in with China and the Belt and Road projects and selling water and farms to Chinese. And so it's just like, well, he's just used this maybe as an opportunity to push his agenda further, or someone's behind him pushing him further, right?
There's someone behind him. There is someone.
Yeah. Yeah. Because he's not smart enough to think it up by himself.
He doesn't. He seems to lack the sophistication, but I think there's some sophisticated people behind him.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the fact, you know, like, so Bill Gates is the number one financial contributor to the World Health. And he's also got his, you know, he's got his finger in every pie in terms of this vaccine. So he has a huge agenda for wanting to get to get this vaccine as, you know, promoted and as rolled out as far and wide as he possibly can. Mm-hmm. So you can see there's a conflict of interest there. It's the pharmaceutical companies and people like Bill Gates that are telling us how deadly this is, despite the evidence suggesting it's not. And it's the same people that are going to give us the cure. So it's almost like that whole, let's create a problem, having the, you know, solution ready to go, create the problem and then sell us the solution. That's something like that's going on.
Feels like that. And even if it's not particularly that, let's just say that it came out of bats in January, right? Whatever it is, they're taking full advantage of it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And you know, when you look at the history, you just look at Bill Gates, he said this is the decade of vaccines. It's like, come on, man, at least try and hide it.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. They're really blatantly obvious, a lot of it. And it seems like, yeah, as you said, they're using COVID, it feels like it's something of a Trojan horse.
Yeah.
To bring in all this new legislation. Mm-hmm.
It really is a backdoor into every country's health system, every country's legislation and stuff like that. We can get into the back door, start controlling the company.
It's that. Good, isn't it? Because it just ticks all the boxes. It creates enormous amounts of fear, and anything is pretty much justified. Anything is justified to if it's when it comes to saving lives. So, I mean, even you can see in Melbourne here how much effort, and they are going to huge amounts of effort to stop anybody getting together to speak out against this. I mean, it's impossible. You can't organize to get 20 people together to have a little sing-along. Because the police, there'll be choppers, there'll be riots. What, within minutes, they'll find you. They're going to so much length. And the fact that we can't get together, we can't speak out in any way. There's, you know, now they're talking, they're censoring Facebook. You can't organize a protest online. They just delete it.
Mm-hmm.
They're giving us no avenue to get together and have a different, and you know, share our views on a different side of this. They're doing everything they can just to distinguish the conversation. And a virus works perfectly because you can see it's like, yeah, well, we don't want people together because they might spread the virus. Okay, so you can't do that. We don't want you to share information on Facebook because that might make people less afraid of this virus, and therefore you're endangering lives by even sharing information on it. Mm-hmm. So it's really, it's a perfect Trojan horse for them because it just nullifies anything anybody could possibly do to speak out against it. There's, there's really nothing we can do. And if this new omnibus bill goes through, it's pretty much game over for any kind of pushback. Once they can start arresting people and detaining people preemptively before any kind of crime's been committed, we're in a lot of trouble.
Yeah, it's not good. It's not good. And this, you know, the scary part is, and I hate doing it, but you have to look at all of the aspects of it. They've got laws in there that specifically speak to separation of children from families and stuff like that too. And yeah, you know, that's not something that you want to the government doing ever. Yeah. And so, you know, it just that's when I see shit like that, I'm like, what are they, you know, because obviously where I go with it is they're gonna try and force vaccination.
Yeah.
That's the obvious reason, the motive why they have to put all these things in place, because then they can create as many officers as they like to enforce their rules and then go door to door and you know, demand that you take their poison.
Which
you wouldn't put it past Daniel Andrews, because he's that blinded to the bigger picture. He has one goal. He's like a greyhound chasing the rabbit. I just got to get the rabbit. And that's don't let anybody in the world die of COVID. But you can die of suicide, you can die of anything else, but we won't look at that.
He's like, my only job is to get the numbers down. And I'm like, hang on a second, mate, that's not your only job. You've got a much bigger job than that. There's a lot more of you to take care of than these numbers. You're the premier of the state.
Yes.
Which, you know, on the brink of complete devastation.
Uh-huh.
And to keep saying that that's all he's focused on is a real worry.
Well, that's a good point. It shouldn't be his job. It should be the health minister's job to get the numbers down, and his job to keep the state running, you know?
Exactly, yeah.
But he's taken it upon himself. He's got the glory now. He's there in his power, you know, up on the stand dictating to everybody how they should and should not live.
Mm.
And he's drunk on it.
You can see how these things happen. I mean, remember with the Iraq war. The Iraq war, so that turned out to be a complete lie. We all know it's a lie now. They make movies about the fact that it was a lie, that there was never any weapons, WMDs. And at the time, that had about 97% approval rate. Us going into the Iraq war had about a 97% in Australia, 97% approval. If you ask anybody now if they're in support of it, everyone says no.
Mm-hmm.
And what that ended up doing, you know, kind of the war on terror, is we changed the laws, because it meant that people who were suspicious of, you know, being involved in terrorist activity could be detained and detained indefinitely, under, you know, trying to keep everyone safe from these monsters. Now you're seeing that same thing happen. This new omnibus bill would seek to detain people indefinitely who they deem to be at risk of perhaps not following the directives.
Preemptively, yeah.
Preemptively. So all they have to do is think, oh, no, we believe that at some point you might not follow the rules, so we can hold you. And you can see how that could apply to pretty much anybody they want. And if you'd mentioned that to me, you know, even a few years ago, that soon in Australia, you'll be able to be held indefinitely without charge. I mean, it's just out of control that could happen in a free democratic society. And from what I hear, is in all likelihood, that's going to go through. I'm hoping to God it doesn't. But if it does, you know, we've all got some decisions to make, I think.
He has annoyed and pissed off the Senate, so that's a good sign. At least they might, you know, stand up against some of the things and make some alterations to it. But yeah, like that omnibus legislation is an extension of the omnibus legislation that they passed in April. And all that legislation does is talk around the human rights breaches that they're committing, because they realized in April, oh, we can't do any of these laws that we want to put in, rules we want to put in place, because they're all breaching human rights. And so we're just going to put these little, you know, paragraphs in here to justify that we're going to breach these human rights.
Yeah.
It's disgraceful. And, you know, you would think that, I would have thought anyway, that Aussies would be up in arms about this. And
it's been surprising, hasn't it? That's been the most surprising part about how many Victorians especially have been willing to go along with this and support it. And like, I have friends, very open-minded, intelligent. And I found that's probably, to be honest, that's what I found the most difficult. People who I, you know, have always kind of been very resonated with very well. And I talk to them, and it's like talking to a brick wall. And it's like, basically what they want to say is, okay, well, let's just agree to disagree. And I'm like, no, I'm not going to agree to disagree, because you're not telling me where you're coming from. You're just saying you disagree with me, but you're not presenting me with any facts or evidence to back up where you're coming from. You just don't want to talk about it. And that's been really strange for me. I don't get that. I mean, talk about this and show me what you got. Show me where you're coming from. You're in support of it. Okay, so just show me the evidence that you're using. And it doesn't appear to be any.
No, it seems to be more of a defense of like, I don't want to look at what the truth might be, because then it's going to crumble my own personal worldview or what my beliefs about the media or government are. So it's tough as well. Like you said, these people probably you're talking about, they're probably in the yoga community, in the spiritual community. And like, it's not that it's bad, because, you know, we obviously want to protect life. We don't want to sacrifice old people. We don't want to throw them on the fire. Right. We're not saying that, but people take that as, if you say we should open things up for those that are healthy, they take that as you're saying, oh, let's just sacrifice everyone then.
But yeah, it's like we don't care when we're reckless. And I always put it out to this. So they're estimating now, and people have a very myopic view of this. And they're estimating now that due to the economic ramifications of these lockdowns worldwide, 4 million people are going to die by the end of the year from poverty. And then that is just the beginning, because this is going to take a decade to recover from. And the economic devastation is going to be like we've never seen before. And maybe we'll, you know, it's going to be tough for us. But think about these second, third world countries. The rate of starvation and poverty, millions upon millions upon millions of people are going to die so that we can feel, you know, it's cozy and safe here. So for me, that kind of accusation of people who are against lockdowns being selfish and reckless and only thinking of themselves, it's absolute bullshit. It's absolute bullshit. It's just, these are the people who are thinking bigger picture rather than this myopic focus on COVID deaths. I mean, just, they're trying to fudge the numbers of suicide. But suicide in Victoria is up huge. Like, and I actually have a friend whose mum died of a suicide recently, and she had a suicide note. She specifically mentioned the lockdown was a cause. One of her, kind of put her over the edge. Now she died of it. Now the coroner has, even though there was a suicide note, has said, no, that wasn't, it was actually a toxic, chemical overdose. So the coroner wouldn't let them put on the death certificate that it was a suicide.
Right.
They put the toxic overdose. So you can see that there's something going on there with the way they're recording, not only these COVID deaths, but they're trying to minimize the amount of suicides. But I've been speaking to Pete. I've got a friend who's in ambulance, and from all everything I'm hearing, we have a real serious problem here with mental health in Victoria at the moment, and it's not being addressed. I don't know why Daniel Andrews isn't up there every day giving us those numbers, because we should all, you know, I mean, if okay, there's a it's a couple of COVID apparently a COVID death. And but the reality is the numbers of suicide just far outweigh anything that COVID has caused here. So something's going on, something's been that's not completely honest and upfront. And that's and I think that's why we're speaking out. And I'm speaking out, and I kind of it's difficult to speak out on this because you cop so much abuse for it. And I get less and less abuse now. I think people are either just getting tired of me or they're starting to go, okay, well, maybe he was right about that and that, and that was true as well. Mm-hmm. And then you get, and then the other thing I'm getting is you get people just kind of offering advice. You know, I got someone telling me that I should really stop what I'm doing because I'm stuck in a victim state of consciousness. And, you know, that wears me out. That wears me out hearing that stuff because it's not easy to put yourself out there. And I'm doing this because I think, and the reason I'm so vocal about it is because I think it's a very serious situation. I don't think it's a situation that we can wait to blow over or we can take lying down. And I don't mind if people choose to sit back and be quiet. That's cool. That's your choice. And I get it because it's a lot once you put yourself into this space. But yeah, I don't appreciate the advice, especially if I haven't asked for it. I don't appreciate that because, you know, it is taking a lot of my energy, and it's difficult every day, and having to deal with that as well is just a little bit too much sometimes. So it's been interesting, and I can see why people want to be quiet because once you begin,
it's a slippery slope.
Very slippery slope.
Yeah. And like at the same time, you know, people have the perspective, you know, we should be locking down. We shouldn't put anyone's lives at risk. But then they still have the same, like that perspective that everyone must be vaccinated. It's like, how do you calculate those two paradoxes of you want to protect people, but you want to put people at risk from a vaccine that hasn't been tested properly, you know? And so there's these massive like discrepancies of like, we must save everyone, but we're going to put everyone at risk in order to save a few. Okay.
So they just came out. So FluVax, which is the most common flu shot, I was just reading this, is actually the mortality rate of FluVax is 0.6%. So it's actually the death rate is higher for the vaccine than it is for the flu or for coronavirus. That is just astonishing. So we're actually, the cure in this case is worse than the actual disease itself. It's more deadly. And the other thing that has been that I just, the way that we're letting, because we can, you know, we get told that we're the insensitive ones and, but the way that we're managing old people, letting old people die alone. I mean, I've never seen something so inhumane to allow old people to die on their own and not have contact with their, I mean, this should never happen. This should never be allowed to happen ever. I mean, this fear we have of death as people, we need to address it because it's causing problems. And if we get to a point where we think it's okay to let old people just kind of rot in bed and die alone to protect other people, I mean, that is one thing that I'll never accept. When people are dying, their family should be with them, and no exceptions. I don't know, put the PPE on or whatever, but that is something we really need to prioritize because there's nothing worse, in my opinion. That's the worst thing to come out of this, that we're letting people die alone, frayed, alone, you know, with broken hearts. That to me is just disgusting, and that should never happen.
Mm-hmm. And like you said, put the PPE on or give people the choice, you know. We're being treated like children.
Yeah.
You know? It's like you're not able to make your own decisions on what you do for PPE if you feel the need to have PPE, and then it becomes, oh, you got to do it for me. It's like, hang on. Have you done any research on masks? If you go to the WHO website, you go to the World Health Organization website, and it will show you the risks associated with wearing a mask, and they almost outweigh the benefits. It actually says on there that there's no evidence to suggest that wearing a face mask prevents the spread of influenza on the WHO website.
It's crazy. Do you know what it's like? It's kind of like, it's the same thing as telling, is kind of making it illegal to have unprotected sex and saying that everybody who has unprotected sex is selfish because there's a chance that they might spread something to someone else that, you know, might come back to me. So that should be illegal. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. you know what I mean? And by doing things like this, we're kind of, we're forgetting what life's all about in this kind of endless, mm-hmm. like run away from death. We are forgetting that we're here to live and that death is an essential part of that. And it's coming very soon. I think, was it the great Russian mystic, Gurdjieff, mm-hmm. he said, you should meditate on this every day. In 100 years time, you and everyone you know will be dead. And he said, every single day you need to meditate on that. In 100 years, you and everybody you love and know will be gone. And to mm-hmm. try and just soften that fear we have that it is just part of life and there is risks. You get in your car, there's a risk. You have sex, there's a risk. There's always risk, but we shouldn't be trying to annihilate any risk, because then what we're going to find is we have lost the very essence of what we're here for. And that is to have a human experience. Mm-hmm. So yeah, let's see if they do that. Let's ban unprotected sex in all circumstances.
Well, in that case, then we probably have to ban sex, because some people can't have sex and it's not fair to them.
That's it.
You know, it's unfair to someone that can't get laid. So we want to create complete equality and safety for everyone. And it's safer if we just remove the process of having children to like a machine. If we can outsource that, you know.
Yeah, that's it.
And probably just if we just don't interact with the opposite sex anymore, and probably we'll do something chemically so there's no such thing as another sex anymore, just to be equal, you know.
That's it. It's got to be fair for everybody. It's got to be
fair. Yeah, it's got to be fair. And this is the two paradigms. It's tyranny and chaos, you know, and they're just turning the screws of this control and tyranny, and it's just like. What is, I wonder every day, what is it going to take to shift us over the edge the other way? Because, you know, generally Aussies are hard to piss off, but once we get there, then we'll let you know about it, you know?
So well, I think at the moment, I think with these JobKeeper payments, it's basically what that is, I think, is a bribe. It's a bribe to shut up. It's like, just shut up, take this money for $750. I mean, for a lot of people, they've just received a pay rise and a holiday.
Yeah.
And as long as that's the case, I imagine a lot of people will just stay quiet. But, you know, at the end of the month, that gets cut, and then it'll get cut again. Suddenly your $750 a week is going to be, you know, $400 a week. And you're going to realize very quickly that you can't survive on this and there's no jobs for you. And you've still got to feed your family. I think at that point, we're going to see a lot of people shift over and wanting to speak up. But by that point, they're going to realize that they can't.
They let it go too far, too long. Yeah.
You think ahead. You got too freaked out in the moment, and they made you too comfortable with your paycheck. And now they're going to slowly drain. And this other thing, I think, with businesses, and I feel really bad for a lot of, so I've got a lot of friends in hospitality and they still believe that, you know, it's going to be fine and their businesses will be open in a couple of weeks and everything's going to be okay. But I think that what's going to happen is they're going to allow businesses to open, like hospitality, between fitness studios, yoga studios. And they're going to say, yeah, you can open, but you can only have 10 people in at a time. And that's going to be the COVID normal for the next year. And these businesses are just going to, you know, they're hanging on to hope. They're hoping that, you know, it'll get better. It'll get better. And they're going to slowly just drain these businesses. I mean, we're already seeing them dropping like flies, but people are still holding on because they think at the end of October, we might get to open. Then it's going to be at the end of November, but then the restrictions are going to squeeze them so hard that it's just devastating. And then was the other thing is, there you go.
Business can't survive. Having a restriction of 10 people into your restaurant or making everybody sit outside. What if it rains, you know, like, and we're not built for this kind of restriction. And like I said before, the COVID normal is communism. It's, There's going to be a COVID warden in every shop, in every premises, and they're going to be there policing with people with masks and giving out fines and all kinds of stupid shit like that. The government's going to be in every level of our life, just making sure that we're doing the right thing, you know, following the rules.
Yeah. And then you would think then, like with all these businesses, and I know heaps that have closed in the last few months, but thinking about, would you be confident, you know, investing in a small business in Melbourne now, you know, opening a studio or a restaurant or a bar? I mean, small business investment is, there's going to be absolutely zero confidence, knowing that it can just be taken from you with no due process, just from one guy deciding that this is what he wants to do and having your life's work stripped right in front of your eyes. I think people are going to be very, very hesitant to open a small business here in Melbourne. So we've got a real problem, because if you walk down Chapel Street now, it's you know,
it's Lee City.
Yeah, 60% of the shops are gone.
Mm-hmm.
They won't open up.
Yeah.
So yeah, we're in a bit of a perilous position, but
bit of a pickle.
We're in a bit of a pickle.
Yeah. Well, where's the hopeful sunshine here, Dylan?
Do you know what? I think the hope for me is that we're getting a real education. We're getting a real education in the political system.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully more and more people are waking up to the fact that we have a serious problem in this country with media.
Mm-hmm.
These mainstream media, you know, ABC used to be all right. It's not anymore. 7, 9, 10, they're all terrible. And they obviously just become mouthpieces for the companies that they work for. We have no independent media in Australia anymore. I can't find any of the others. A couple of very small media outlets. So that's a big, hopefully wake up to that. And we bring in some regulations around that. And then we're starting to wake up to the political system and starting to pay more attention to that. So that I hope is good. And obviously globally, not so much here, but globally, there's a lot of resistance coming now. All people in Europe and stuff are fighting back, as I said, in Berlin. And hopefully it becomes a bit of a movement that, we're not going to be treated like this anymore. We didn't know what we, you know, there was, I don't know much about this, but maybe, you know, the federal government was served by the Aboriginal community. Did you hear about that?
I did see a video of it. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So we're basically waking up to our legal system, which is looking more and more like it's a very fraudulent system.
Mm-hmm.
So hopefully, you know, people power prevails and we come together, you know, with love, and we find a way forward, that is not based around fear and division, that, you know, is based around reestablishing the world we want to live in and in communities and a more natural lifestyle. I mean, I don't know how they've convinced us that, you know, it's okay to inject a kid 75 times with toxic ingredients before his 15th birthday. And then all of these, you know, drugs that we're told to take and the food that we eat. I mean, hopefully we're waking up to all of this, that this isn't good for us. This isn't serving us. This isn't good for our bodies. This isn't good for our soul. And we start to find a better way to do things. That's what I hope anyway.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is very dense, the amount of manipulation that they do. And it sounds conspiracy to say, you know, that they're manipulating, but literally everything that we eat, everything that we drink, everything that our air, our skies, they're all being manipulated by some source. And, you know, as we go further into this, as this time seems to be speeding up the process of evolution of the technological side of things, but also speeding up our awareness of it, our awakening to it, to be like, hey, do we really want this? As you see, you know, like with 5G exploding around the world, and then, you know, you've got these AI technologies and human implants, like Elon Musk is trying to bring in his, you know, Neuralink, and then circle the entire world with Starlink satellites. And so there'll be no place on Earth that won't be under the watchful eye of these satellites. And then you've got Bill Gates wants a set of satellites, and Amazon wants a set, and Google wants a set. And next thing you know, they're going to have 60, 70,000 satellites.
That's it.
Circling the world, you know.
We need to.
So we really do need to make some decisions in the next couple of years, you know.
Well, that's it. We need to. What kind of world do we want to live in? Do we want to live in these smart cities and in an artificial world? Do we want to be injected with toxic ingredients, you know, every year? Do we want? Is this what we want? And if it's not, we're the ones that have to do it. I mean, no one's going to do it for us. I mean, there's a lot of, I know in the States, there's a lot of people who are putting a lot of hope in, you know, Trump's going to save us. He's going to save us from this. But I don't feel that he's that kind of guy, to be honest. Like, I think no one's going to save us. No one's coming to save us. If we want to change, we have to do it ourselves. Mm-hmm. We're going to take on the responsibility. And I think that might be foreign to us a lot, because we've kind of lived in these very privileged worlds where everything's kind of taken care of and we trust. But if we want to change the system, it's going to have to be us, the people, that change it. And we've got to stop waiting for some politician to come and save the day, because history tells us that that doesn't happen.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Anything else you want to hit us with before we wrap it up?
Yeah, I guess going forward, I think, I just want I would like the message to be, because there's a lot of division with people at the moment and a lot of fear. And I think we've got to find a way, whether you're whatever side of the fence you're on, but we've got to find a way to move forward from here with love and kind of being open with each other. And if you are wanting to stand up against this, there is a lot of fear and intimidation coming from the government and from the police. And as much as we can, we've got to step out of that. You know, it's going to take courage. It's going to take courage for us to get out of this. But I think, you know, fear is that which is diametrically opposed to love. You know, fear will always pull us apart and divide us and keep us separate. Love will always bring us together. So as much as we can, starting to make our decisions from a place of love, coming with a bit of courage, coming together, having these discussions, talks like we're having, you know, this is good stuff. This is, you know, this is worthy of discussion. This is a subject that's worthy of discussion. And I'm sick of the term conspiracy theory. It's a ridiculous term. And we just need to stop using it, because it's just a way to pretty much shut up anybody who disagrees with what's happening. And it just kills off any discussion. So let's stop using that. Let's have conversations about it. Let's come from a place of love and let's work together and try and save this state from what is, you know, the brink of total devastation.
Yeah. I love that too. And it's so simple that even if you disagree with the conspiracy theory, then you should be able to have the conversation and debunk it.
Yeah.
You know, not just shut it down and say, oh, that's a conspiracy, we're not going to talk to it. But if you're so sure that your perspective is right, you could have the conversation and a debate and a healthy one and go deep into it and talk about it. But it just seems that there's some topics that we just won't speak about until they want to use them for their own agenda. So they won't speak about hydroxychloroquine for all year. And then at the end of the year, they'll be like, oh, look, we found this amazing possible solution, and pretend that we're all idiots.
What geniuses. Yeah, it becomes taboo, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And I've always felt like the vaccine thing is taboo. Somehow it made us believe that to question the safety of vaccines makes you a nut job. But all of these people that, I'm not anti-vax, you know, I want safe vaccines. I can see that there's the theory behind it's good and it's potentially worked in the past. But all these people, if you have questioned any of the 75 vaccines on the schedule, if you even question one of them, you're a nutcase. But the people that call you a nutcase, they can't even tell you what's in them. They can't tell you anything about them. They're not aware if there was safety testing or if they caused, they don't know anything. It's just, you're just a nutcase for asking a question. And that to me says there has been some serious mind manipulation happening for a long time to make such a topic as injecting children from the day they're born as much as they do. If you even want to question the validity of that, you're a nutcase. That is weird. That is weird.
Very weird. Yeah. Yeah. And yeah, I don't know. I feel like that this is all about the rise of the feminine. And yeah. So I feel like the mothers know best, right? Mothers have that protective instinct. And I think that if they do what I think they're going to try and do with around the vaccine and this new poison, especially considering that COVID doesn't have fatal impacts on children, right? I feel like they're going to really awaken the Kali in all of the women, you know, and they'll be, you know, pissed off. I'm not saying that men shouldn't, but I'm saying that women are going to feel it first, and they'll probably be the first to arc up and say, we're not going to have a bar of this. And you know, it worries me that it has to get that far before people take it seriously, you know, but we'll see how it all plays out.
I hope there's enough women, because I've been speaking, you know, my sister just had a baby and friends have had babies, and they're definitely more aware of it now, but there's obviously so much stigma comes with making that decision to not vaccinate your children, and they can't, you know, no jab, no play. It's very difficult for people to take that stance. So hopefully with more awareness and what's happening now, more and more people start to ask those questions and can kind of get together and go, no, we're not going to take this. We want to know that these are safe. Mm-hmm. You're not going to put anything you want in my child. We want to see the studies. We want to see the double-blind placebo studies that show that these things are safe in the long term, which they've never done, by the way.
They don't do them, though.
They don't.
That's right.
Studies. And then, and just so everyone knows out there, these vaccine companies have zero liability. So they could inject your child. Your child could have a reaction to that and have permanent brain damage. And then you'll want to sue the vaccine company, as well you should. But you can't. They are not liable. They are not liable. So they have no...
Even in Australia.
They're not liable. They have no financial incentive to keep your kids safe. Because they... And do you know what their reason is for that? They're like, if we were to be liable for these injuries, all of these injuries that vaccines cause, we wouldn't make any profit. And I'm like, I don't give a shit, man. I don't give a shit if you don't make any profit. I want me and my kids to be safe, and I really don't care about your profits. But they believe that if they were liable, they wouldn't be a profitable business. So that's just something to be really aware of. That they've got a get out of jail free card. Every other pharmaceutical drug that is on there, there is liability. Vaccines, there is none. So yeah, that's astonishing to me.
Well, there you go. One of my favorite docos this year has been Plandemic 2, because it just wraps it up nicely. It gives a nice little introduction into what's really going on with the vaccine kind of stuff. Mm. Is there any other recommendations you have?
So I would be if you want to look further into this, Robert F. Kennedy Jr. He's brilliant. He's leading the charge. Such a courageous man when you consider what happened to his, you know, his father and his uncle.
Right.
His father and his uncle were speaking out in a similar way, and we know what happened to them. So now here's Robert F. Kennedy Jr. carrying on the family tradition, and he's fighting these companies. He's fighting, you know, a big fight against Monsanto, against a lot of these pharmaceutical companies. He's started a new business, but like an organization. It's called Children's Health Defense. So he's a really great one to follow, a really genuine person, highly, highly educated, and he's across this stuff. So that's where I would be telling people, go and follow him. And there's some other great documentaries out there. To be honest, I watched the Plandemic. I try not to get too I try just for my own sanity, I try not to go too far down the rabbit holes with the conspiracy, you know, stuff that's out there, because I think a lot of it is, fantasy. But it's not like you either have to be all the way in this corner or all the way. The truth is going to be somewhere in the middle here. So this is the space we want to be exploring. But yeah, so I try and keep
that said, I prefer to stick with the stories that we're being told, even by the mainstream, using their own information and looking at it through my lens, but looking at it and asking the questions from what we're being presented. Because oftentimes they do present the true information, but their story about it is bullshit, right? And so rather than getting caught up in the conspiracy and who's the dark, deep state behind it, just going into that currently happening and you know, bringing attention to that. Yeah,
that's it. And just dealing with what
dropped out a bit there, maybe. Yeah,
cool. All right, I better leave it there because I've got a meeting in 10 minutes.
Too easy, mate. Appreciate your time. Thanks for coming and having a chat.
For having me, it's really good to talk about it because, you know, you probably experience it's hard to get people to talk about this with, and we're in our heads with it a lot, and sharing on Facebook's one thing, but actually being able to have a conversation, I think, is really helpful. So good work.
Awesome, man. Also, with those 5G studies, is there a one website where they all live?
I've got them all in a folder. I'll send them to you.
All right, great. That'd be awesome. Thanks.
Cool.
Have a good one.
All right. See you guys. Thank you.
Hey, mate. Big thanks to Dylan Newman for having this chat with me today. And if you would like to learn more about meditation, I know Dylan spoke about meditating, being in silence for 3 months at the beginning of the podcast, which is outrageous. I want to do it for 10 days, but 3 months, come on. I'm sure it'll be good too. But if you would like to learn a powerful meditation technique that is designed for people who are called householders, which is people that live in the world, not for monks. It's for people that have jobs and homes and families, but you want to still get the benefits of meditation and you don't know how to do it, or you've been doing it, but you feel like maybe there could be more. I run a course. I teach a being technique, which is the most expansive state of awareness that we can access with our eyes closed. And this, having this experience every day, imprints upon the mind and the body and restores our natural state of consciousness, if you will. So yeah, it has many benefits, from releasing stress and fatigue, increasing our capabilities and our adaptability, helping us sleep better, becoming less reactive. So many things, so many good things. But you can talk about all that, but when you do it, you have the direct experience of it, and that's way better. So if you would love to find out more information, hit me up at spiritualtradie@gmail.com. I'm running courses online weekly. Also, I can do privates if you would like to customize a session for yourself. And if you don't want to go onto the Gmail address because you don't like sending emails, you can slide into my DMs on Insta while I'm still there. And send me a message and we'll organize some more information and a time to teach you this powerful, powerful technique, which does all wonderful things. So until then, until next body, just, you know, live it up.